Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Our next guest argues with some hard facts that employee wellness programs can add profits to a small business. Chris Powell, who is CEO of Telemetrics, joins us now. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, I'm going to start off by asking you the basic question. Why do you say healthy employees with a wellness program can add profits to a small business?
Well, if employees, here's why I say that, right? So if you think about everything that happens at a company at some point requires employees or people to do something. And so if people are able to show up and be in their best shape or live in their best lives, that puts them in a better position to bring their best game to work, meaning bring their talents, their time, and their creativity to work. If you've got an employee population that is not well, you've got a lot of absenteeism, lower productivity. So that's why we say, hey, investing in wellness is a really good thing, in particular for small businesses where we tend to have to ask more of our people because we have fewer people. So you want to make sure that everybody's at their optimal level of physical and mental performance.
Well, what does your company do?
So at Telemetrics, we are a company focused on helping other companies capture and aggregate talent data from their employees around their experience to help them, get better at improving employee retention, engagement, performance, and productivity through the use of data.
Okay, when it comes to data, I turn it over to Dan. He's the data.
So, Dan, are you the numbers man?
I am the number guy. I'm a registered investment advisor, been managing money for almost 44 years, so I'm the number cruncher. So where is your company located, Chris?
We're located in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, down the road from where I was born and raised in Columbus.
Just down the way.
Yeah, and so what is your – do you have a company have a website?
Yes, we have a website. We're at www.talmetrix.com.
Okay. And how long have you been in business?
Let's see. We were originally started in November of 2008, so we're coming up on 9 years.
10 years, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So who is the typical kind of customer that you would have today?
So our typical customer today is a organization somewhere between 300 and 5,000 employees. They typically, some would call that small to medium-sized company. They tend to be either going through a series of events in their growth, either high growth or retrenching and coming out of a turnaround situation, or doing a lot of mergers and acquisition work, or driving a lot of new innovation. So one of those four things are happening with the clients that we companies we tend to work with.
How do you, as a small business, how do you get a new client?
Oh, my goodness. Smoke signals, drum beats, all kinds of things. So we use, we go old-fashioned from cold calling to referrals and relationships to actually doing both inbound and outbound marketing. So we use all of the social marketing tools that are out there from Google AdWords to Facebook to LinkedIn to Twitter to to be able to put out thought leadership as well as product marketing to attract customers.
So would you say that your business is in the business of providing services on a retainer or a project basis?
Because we're a technology platform, Dan, it's more on what I would call on a retainer basis or on a subscription basis, as we would describe it, where
okay.
a client engages us, you know, on a 12-month or 24 or 36-month basis to be able to provide the technology and service and support that we can help them in collecting that talent data to generate these unique insights.
Mm-hmm. Given the change that's taken place, we had a period of time where we've talked to people over the last few months, probably now 7 months, who talked about how difficult it was to do business, to grow a business and do business in the period of the Obama administration. They didn't see the Obama administration as being very business friendly. Yet the momentum and what we're hearing from people who are in the business-to-business space, they're telling us as we're doing interviews with them, four of them a week, that things have changed dramatically under the new administration. And not so much that the government is doing so much as the enthusiasm for opportunity by the business owners is growing. Are you seeing that in your business?
I'm definitely seeing that there's more activity, but I think I've got a, you know, kind of a unique perspective being here in the state of Ohio and Cincinnati, which I came into this business about 4 years ago, and I was pleasantly surprised, you know, all a bit of what I was seeing in other places, how progressive both the city and the state here were being in terms of supporting economic development, in particular with early stage businesses like ours. And so I don't quite get, I understand in general kind of the bigger issue, but here locally it was a tale of a different story per se. But I can say now there's definitely a lot more energy and momentum around economic development and creating jobs and growth, in particular in the small and mid markets, and you know where I am, and in the fact that I'm in technology, STEM related businesses are also getting a lot of attention, which I like because that helps me.
who would be a typical competitor?
So. In our space, I don't know if we've got a direct head-to-head competitor. We have what I call near competitors, people that play in parts of our space but not our full offering. So we run into, on the employee engagement or employee culture and doing those kind of projects and work, we run into companies like, CultureAmp and Glint and Tiny Pulse HR, so you'll see some of those companies out there, and Office Vibe is another name that's fairly well known in that space. But then in terms of what we're able to do with data, in particular around HR and talent data, there's companies like Vizier that play in our space as well.
Mm. I'm curious as to your position as it relates to employee health programs.
Mm-hmm.
Does your company actually work with an individual employee and develop an exercise plan, a lifestyle plan, or diet, or whatever? Do you do that?
Given our size right now, we've got 16 folks that work with us day in and day out. We don't do that at our level, but our partner or vendor that we pick to provide our healthcare plans, Humana in this case, they
mm-hmm.
offer those services for our employees to participate in those. And there's a benefit to us that when the employees are participating in some of these programs that Humana offers in the area of wellness and health, they can actually earn points and get discounted on their premiums, which drives our cost down and drives their cost down. So there's mutually benefit. So we don't offer it directly, but our provider does. And let me tell you, I champion and highly suggest and recommend people take advantage of it. Not just because it's it's the right thing to do from a health standpoint, but it also helps us in terms of our cost structure, being able to provide other benefits to them as well.
When you're working with your healthcare providers like Humana, do you get a lot of pushback from employees about wanting to do something, or is there an increasing concern about personal wellness?
Well, I got to tell you, Dan, recently, I'll just give you a little story. On our side, I think the employees have liked being able to have a resource or a tool to be able to, tap into these offerings from Humana. But the other thing that came out of it recently, a couple of the folks on the team came to me and said, hey, Chris, I've been signing up for this yoga class that's, five blocks from the office. I'm wondering, hey, can we offer a yoga class here once a week? And I was like, well, let's figure out how many people. So guess what? On Wednesdays at 12 o'clock, we offer yoga every week now. It's a good thing. I'm all for it, as long as it's, people are taking advantage of it, they're getting some benefit out of it, and it's helping raise all the boats rise together with it.
Dan, I have to interrupt for a second. We're talking with Chris Powell, who's CEO of Telemetrics, and we've got to stop here for a brief word from our sponsor.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. So you formed your business and you used an LLC. Do you really know what you want to do and how to get there? Not without a business plan. An old Chinese saying, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there. So here is your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. There are a lot of great books on building business plans. I suggest you start simple. As your business grows, you can become more elaborate. I recommend The Business Plan for Dummies, available in local bookstores or at Amazon. If you know nothing about business plans, then a complicated plan may well scare you away from doing one at all. You used to be able to do things by the seat of your pants, but no more. Don't be a dummy. Get a book, and you'll be smarter for it. This has been your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. I'm Dan Perkins.
We're back with Chris Powell, who is CEO of Telemetrics. What can I say except he's a data-driven company? We're learning a lot. But, Dan, could I jump in and ask a question?
Sure.
How long is Chris, how long have you been in business?
Yeah, so we've been in business since 2008. Initially, we started off as a consulting firm, and in 2013, we pivoted to a software technology company.
Well, in that time, what are the three things that you might pass on to our small business listeners? You're in the healthcare space. 1/6 of our economy is. But in general, what would you want to pass on to our listeners?
I think for anybody that's running, managing, or owning a small business today, I would say that the earlier you can understand the people who are working for you and understanding what their needs are so that they can show up and perform and produce and deliver the level of service that you want them to, is understand who they are and what they need. I think oftentimes in small businesses, because we think they're small, we know everything, and sometimes I think we forget to ask. So I would say in terms of trying to figure out what to offer your employees to drive you know, engagement or retention or whatever, ask the question. Don't rely on the water cooler get your insight. So get the facts, not the gossip, as I call it. And then the other thing is that, you know, the diversity of the people that are working with you, and I'm not just talking about the obvious physical diversity that we bring to the table, but the needs of people are uniquely different. And I used to think that most people wanted the same thing, but I quickly realized they don't. So I think back to the whole listening thing and understanding what drives and motivates people is really critical for small business owners, as it is for any owner. But then for a small business owner, I think it's even paramount because you've got to be really cost conscious on how you offer those things and then do it in a way that meets where you are in terms of your financials and your goals that you're trying to set for yourself. So I think it's a little more challenging for small business owners, but it's not impossible to get it right.
Back to you, Dan.
Thank you. Chris, I want to ask a hopefully not too uncomfortable question for you, but I need to ask it anyway. How did the implementation, and I'm going to use my bias, the bastardization of Obamacare and the plethora of changes in the rules, how did that affect you and your business and your customers?
Well, it's like any game, right? So if you guys can remember when you were a kid and you went to a neighborhood to play kickball or any sport, right? You have the rules that you knew from your neighborhood of how to play that game. And then you go to another neighborhood, and there are different rules. And I think the challenge for Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act or, you know, whatever name you want to give it, I think the challenge for small businesses was the changing dynamics around what was required, what wasn't required, what was real fact, what wasn't, what was perception. So I think a lot of it was just massive confusion. And let's not even get into the cost factors, right, which was another issue for small businesses, I think. So I don't disagree that, you know, there was a lot about the Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act that just, you know, it's not the word negative, just to say it was an issue that could have been better managed, and I think it just put more complexity on the small business owners. I think the larger companies where I've worked had more resources and tools and lawyers to be able to figure out how to navigate that, but for small businesses, it was quite confusing.
Dan, I'd just like to interrupt here and say one thing. The example that you used with the kickball is one of the best I've heard in all the years of Obamacare. Chris, you'd be... don't you agree, Dan? We've heard a lot of explanations, but
sure.
But that's a really good one, and I just I couldn't let that pass.
Well, I think it was a keen observation because what Chris is saying is nobody knew what the rules of the game were.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what the rules of the game are, you don't know how to play.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, I look at it always, if I know what the rules are, then I can figure out what my strategy is. But if the rules are like sand and I'm always moving, it's just like I got, you know, it's a different set of muscles and different things you have to do.
Yeah, it seemed to me that the administration philosophically knew what they wanted to do. Administratively, they had no clue. And they could not give any guidance to you or the insurance companies or to the employers about what was they're supposed to do. They changed all the time.
Yep. And we know from experience around this call is in the absence of clarity, we know what happens. People start assuming and things start to take on a life of their own, and true or not true, but it just, you know, it just messes, you know. Let's just say, yeah, that can go on and on.
Chaos.
Oh, that's a good one. Thank you. I like that one.
No, it was just Dan and I have been for years talking about Obamacare, but I've seldom heard one explaining it so so clearer than that. I just could not pass. And I intend to steal it from you, Chris, it's so good.
No, have at it. But yeah, and so the thing for me that was interesting over the last couple of months as Congress was trying to do the repeal and replace or whatever different five or six different versions that we went through in that short period of time, even that started to create some more confusion for small business owners because, you know, you're sitting there like, well, what, should I plan for this? Should I plan for that? So I, you know, the lack of leadership, you know, between either, you know, either party or administration on this, I don't think they understand the ripple effect of the noise that they create for small businesses because we got businesses to run. You know, we're not sitting around being policy wonks and trying to figure this stuff out. We're trying to figure out how to deliver the goods and services and, you know, engage and retain our employees. And, you know, I just don't know if there's always an appetite to think about the small business owner who's trying to figure this stuff out while still growing the, you know, growing their business and the economy, because we all know that small businesses are what makes America what it is today.
Right.
So, I'll get off my soapbox.
It's all right. It's amazing to me, Chris, that we're dealing with politicians, many of who have never written a paycheck. Mm-hmm. They've never had to hire anybody or fire anybody. So they don't really know what it means to be a small business. And they, it's amazing to me, Chris, the number of times when they run across something, well, I never knew that, or I never thought about that. You know, it's your policy wonks. It's lack of experience, and they don't understand that the big lobbying efforts may be with the big corporations. But as you pointed out so rightly, the people who make this country grow are the small businesses, people under 500 employees. That's mm-hmm. where the growth in America comes from. So I have a soapbox, too. How much time do we have left, Don?
Hey, a fellow soapboxer. Boxer, love it.
Don, how much time do we have? Well, so what do you see, Chris, what do you see the challenges for your business going forward?
The challenges going forward, I think for us is the rate of change is accelerating so fast out there in terms of technology. One, it's just making sure we've got the right people. And when I say right people, and for us, that means people who, you know, are coming out of STEM-related, you know, careers or background or education, who understand technology and all the advancements that are coming with that. You know, we're fighting, you know, here in Cincinnati, we're going up against big companies like Procter & Gamble and Kroger and Macy's and, you know, God knows who else for talent. And so we just need more skilled talent to continue to drive innovation because we all know innovation happens through people. And I know a lot of people want to say computers do it, but people program computers. So it starts with people. So we need more people that are able to be and do things so that we can continue to innovate in this country, I think. So I that's one of my big challenges, I think, for our business is being able to have the right people to, you know, to do the type of jobs we need. And my business grows when there are other businesses out there that are growing. So more businesses growing would be helpful, too, for us. So if we can figure out what it takes to continue to keep the economy growing at the rate that it has, you know, that's another thing that I would say is a concern that I think about is, hey, make sure I've got somebody to sell to.
Chris, this is my last comment, and then we've got to go. I heard this comment. I can't take authorship, but this person said, if you're in an HR position, if you're, as you just talked about, looking for people,
mm-hmm.
the person made the comment, which I thought was, I chuckled a little bit at the comment. He said, if you're sitting down and you're talking to people and their resume says they have a college degree that ends in the word studies, don't hire them because they're not going to be able to help you. People who are studying something are not, they're not bachelors in business administration or mathematicians or engineers. Their degree is not something that they can bring into the work environment and be productive. What do you think about hiring people, and are you willing to take the chance of hiring people right out of college with whether they have a degree in studies or something else who have no experience?
Well, I'll give you – well, the thing – one of the big things for me is somebody's ability to learn, right? And most colleges are examples if people are able to, you know, matriculate and graduate and get a degree. Hopefully they've demonstrated at least they're able to learn something. So I don't know if I fully get the, you know, what the degree is in, but I will tell you a short story. A young lady on our team was fresh out of college, and she went to school to be a microbiologist researcher. Never coded a day in her life, wouldn't know, you know, in terms of writing, you know, computer code. She went through a program where she took some development classes, and now she's one of our lead developers on our team. So I'm just looking for folks, one, who have the ability to learn, who are curious to learn, and have the will to learn. And from there, the rest of it just comes, you know, because I, you know, most of my jobs I've ever gotten in my life, I didn't know what I was supposed to do until after I got in the job. So I'm always saying, hey, if you got the will, the curiosity, and the capacity to learn, let's get to it.
Back to you, Don.
Boy, Chris, that's the last word. We've been talking with Chris Powell. We could go on and on. We have been talking with Chris Powell, who's CEO of Telemetrics. His company is about how small businesses can add profits with an effective wellness plan. A link to his website will be on our webpage, www.recalculating.biz, tonight. Thank you so much, Chris, for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Glad to be here. Thanks, guys.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Are you protecting yourself against lazy lawsuits? You may be asking, what is a lazy lawsuit? This is a lawsuit because you have not been paying attention to the details. It used to be that you could do business on a handshake, but unfortunately, not anymore. Handshakes don't have any details, so both parties have to remember the same things for the handshake to work. The problem enters in when memories fail, and it turns into he said and she said. Here is the Recalculating Small Business tip of the day. Work with the client in developing a contract. That way your customer will be putting in writing what he expects you to do and when the job is to be completed. You will know what and when is expected of you. It may take a little extra time, but it will save you both time and money. I'm Dan Perkins from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Our next guest is Jonathan Groff. He's from Pennsylvania. His family has been in the food business a long time. And more importantly, he's taking a Pennsylvania product and he wants to take it national, and it's a fascinating. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it.
Jonathan, tell us first what your product is and why people like it, and then we'll go from there, and Dan will have all sorts of questions once he hears all about it.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so we are Stroopies. Stroopies is actually a nickname for stroopwafel, which is actually a Dutch product from Holland originally, from the Netherlands. And we had a friend that helped us get going with it here in the U.S. And so we just call ourselves Stroopies. For simplicity's sake, that's also what we produce. That's the name of our product. And basically it's a cinnamon cookie about 3.5 inches in diameter, baked in a waffle iron. So it comes out very flat, about 1/8 inch thick. And we actually slice it open, like fillet it open to two sides and spread caramel in the middle and close it back up again. And, of course, it's really good to eat hot off the press, but most of our product is then packaged and sold to stores. And then traditional Dutch way to warm it up would be to take your stroopwafel and put it on top of your favorite hot beverage and allow the heat to begin to warm up the caramel that's on the inside. It takes about a minute or two, and then it becomes a really good, like, cinnamon caramel treat with your hot beverage. So that's, we do different things with that, but that's basically the one main thing that we make and sell.
So I'm about ready to run out the door and try and find it. The way you described it, I could eat about a dozen of those things. so let's talk before we talk about how you want to go national. How long have you been in business? Is it a family business? And how much of the family's involved? And where do you see your business going?
Sure. Yeah. I'll try to keep it in a brief nutshell here. But yeah, basically, a good friend of mine in 2008 started the company. He started with a heart to be able to give employment to refugees who come into the area. And Lancaster, Pennsylvania, is a real welcoming community for refugees. And so that's still the basis of our vision of the company. It's a small corporation, but as far as being family business, my wife and I are both owners in the company, and we are the ones who are in it day to day. And there are sometimes my children help out. We live only about 10 blocks from where we make it, and the refugee ladies that we work with also are within walking distance from the store. So it has a lot of that small family feel. Our family's involved with it. My wife and I joined in 2010, so about 2 years later after it got started. We've been working with it ever since. I definitely put us in the very small business category. We have a full-time manager and one full-time employee from Burma. And then what happens in the fourth quarter of the year, we hire about five more ladies for temp work because it's such a great gift season item. And
so how do people buy your product today?
Most of it is found, okay, so Lancaster is kind of the hub, and we're reaching out of that. We're probably in about 80 different stores, most of which are within a few hours of Lancaster. So we're in small family-owned grocery stores like Stouffer's of Kissel Hill. Wilbur Chocolates is based out of Lidditz. They have an outlet store that sells ours. We dip some of them in chocolate, in their chocolate. There's also a strong online business, stroopies.com is our website, STROOP, as in Paul, IES.com, where you can go online and buy them there. And then, of course, we have our own retail store in the heart of Lancaster City called the Lancaster Sweet Shop, and you can actually go in and watch them being made and get one that comes, like, right off the line. So that's, if you're anywhere close to Lancaster, that would be the most enjoyable experience, I think, to be able to watch them being made and just enjoy them. right away.
Okay,
when
so
warm.
If we look at where you're currently distributing, what percentage of your business comes from internet sales?
Probably only about 20%.
Okay. So if you're thinking about becoming going from a regional product to a national product, what do you think the challenges are for you as a corporation and you as the guy running the shop on a day-to-day basis? What is going to have to happen to move to, quote, a national product?
Yeah, that's a great question and one that's been hot on my mind as about 2 weeks ago we came back from the Fancy Food Show in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And ran into all kinds of people there. We were a great fit for just individual retailers who were ready to sell our product because we can drop ship it to them or to their customers, you know, UPS or postal. But then there were companies that were looking, hey, you know, what size are your, you know, how many cases fit on a skid, for example, and then what's your shelf life? And, you know, those questions really demand some answers and some preparation that we have to do to be a national company. And so shelf life is a big thing. We don't have any preservatives, but we have found we're testing some opportunities where instead of using clear packaging where the sunlight can still go through and oxygen slowly seeps through those barriers, we have a tin and we can put them in an aluminized bag and then and take out the oxygen. And then the shelf life, you know, I did my first test here about 4 months ago. It opened in and tasted like it was just made, which was really exciting to me. So I need to keep testing that to see, because a lot of distributors won't work with us unless we have 6 months shelf life. So that's the huge challenge of going national and big. The other thing is our facility is so small, we don't have a dock. We don't have a place to put a skid. So,
have you considered the possibility of once you get if you're successful in getting the six-month shelf life issue resolved, have you considered the possibility of looking for a venture capital partner who can help you create a facility that will allow you to have the loading dock and a bigger processing plant so that you can fulfill pallets of cases as opposed to one at a time?
Right. And yes, definitely. That's the next goal for us. I mean, we know we're going to need that capital to help us out with it. One of the reasons to go to the Fancy Food Show is just to try to get more of a response back from brokers to say, hey, this is great. We'd really love you if you could do this. And that would give us some more motivation and something to show venture capitalists to say, hey, if we had the funding, we could set ourselves up for you know, the national market.
You know, one of the questions that does come up occasionally is, should I, as an entrepreneur thinking about your business, should I stay where I am and not take the risk of trying to find a venture capital partner to try and build a national business for a company that on the surface seems to have a singular niche product?
Right.
And yeah, so are you thinking about those issues?
Well, yeah. I know that's the challenge that we're it's functioning well as it is right now, and to take a huge step into like a big box store market, for example, in one giant leap would be really petrifying to me because I don't know if it will work or be able to stand on its own as one product rather than, you know, a whole line of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to find out is it possible to take baby steps? And I know there are still, like, you get a larger facility, you need the larger accounts immediately. You know, there's these big leaps that we have to take. My test case thing is to keep pushing out. Internet sales allows us to grow substantially without some of the big volume kind of things. And so we are also on Amazon and, you know, trying to push them out just to keep testing if it can work at that level. And then, yeah, I'd be lying if I wouldn't say that I was nervous about the big market.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine if it does well as a single case item, someone will come along and try to say, hey, can we buy you and add you to our brand? But that's not the goal of where we're heading. We are not really after the big bucks. We're after growing an environment where the refugees in our area can find first-time employment, and really them being empowered. We offer a language class as part of our day, and when they stay with us for like 3 months, we send a letter of recommendation with them if they aren't able to stay with us. And so the challenge of keeping that at the front of us, we are a B Corp. I'm not sure if you're familiar with B Corps or not, but where the mission of our company is as essential as the bottom line of finances. And so that's going to be the challenge, someone else trying to come in and grow it, and yet they have to sign on to the mission too. And so another company is not going to be able to buy us and still keep that mission likely, you know, it's unless it's another B Corp or someone who really understands that.
So I want to ask you a question about what you just said, and I'm sitting here thinking about it. but I want to preface the question that I want to ask you is I'm not asking the question to be critical. I'm asking the question because I want our listeners to be able to have some insight into the decision-making process that the dilemma that I believe from what I heard from you that you're in. It seems to me that as I heard you, you have a single employee, a refugee, and then towards the fourth quarter of the year, when the Christmas season comes, you add three or four. And you see that as fulfilling the mission of your company. If you expand the business in terms of opportunities to sell, and it would appear based on what you're saying, the 6 month shelf life is absolutely key. If you can find a way to get to the 6 month shelf life and prove that, it will open up additional distribution. But if you sell the company because it is such a niche product and somebody wants to add it to their existing product line, that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be moved from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. In fact, in your negotiations with the purchase agreement, maybe you build part of your purchase agreement relationship is that they build a larger facility that will hire more migrants or more refugees in your local market, which helps fulfill the original mission of the company, even though it's no longer an active owner of the program. So there are ways to which negotiate, but the realism, the issue that I want to raise to you is the ability to grow a substantial business based on a singular product. Do you believe that carries, as I do, a significant amount of survival risk?
You know, that's the We have not invested. We're trying to grow this business step by step, and we don't have investors involved. We don't have debt involved. And so we're kind of testing out each year as we go and as we grow. I do think there's probably significant risk, but I'm also very, very intrigued and motivated, if you will, to do one thing and to do that one thing really well. And yeah, I think there's a big question whether we'll ever get into box stores. Probably not, but there are other ways to go national. Maybe we are a food line for a hotel chain. Everyone gives a Stroopy in a popular hotel chain to their customers. I mean, that would ramp us up so high and be more predictable and, you know, a whole lot better than the box store realm. So I think there's ways in this society to grow substantially without trying to compete with the other big name brands. And I will be the first to admit there's an awful lot I don't know about the national market. My family, as was mentioned earlier by Don, has been in the food business for many generations, but it's always been at the local farmer's market. You know, it's always been direct retail sales to Lancaster County tourists. And so there's a whole lot about the food market I do know, but as far as the wholesale and the large part, there's a lot I don't know. So I'm looking to glean at every moment that I can.
So we've got to take a break here for a commercial message. And then when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Jonathan about some other issues an entrepreneur facing. How does he grow his business? We'll be right back after this message from our sponsor.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book. Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Are you having trouble growing your business? Do you have a mentor? Sometimes running a small business can be overwhelming. You need a mentor. A business mentor can help you in many facets of your business. So here's your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. The SBA has a free program called SCORE. These individuals give of their time and share their experiences to create the next generation of small business owners who help grow the American economy. SCORE is the nation's largest network of volunteer expert business mentors. It provides free and confidential business consulting. These volunteers will work with individuals on starting a business, solving business problems, and growing a business. Visit www.score.org and you may just hit a home run. This has been your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. I'm Dan Perkins.
Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.
Hey, you know, Jonathan, as the audience may know, I met you at the Fancy Food Show where there were 2,600 booths, a variety of products, and by the way, just up on our site Recalculating, I just posted a story about what were the trends in the food industry out of the show by the show panel, Jonathan, you were not amongst the only people that had essentially a one product offering at the show, and the reason I invited you on the program was twofold. One, you have a great product, and two, you're really trying to make work for refugees, which I think is laudable. And Dan has certainly brought up some very interesting points. But you are by nature an entrepreneur. How do you feel your long-term prospects are?
Well, you know, to be honest, my perspective on that is, and I don't mean to be cliche with the statement, but God only knows.
He truly
spoken
does.
Like a true entrepreneur.
I am. You know, I think there's some advantage to the lean growth model that we've taken on. Being that I'm not in debt, I'm willing to keep experimenting with it as long as it keeps growing. And if it stops and it doesn't work, then I'll do something else. And I'm not afraid of that. I enjoy that adventure. So I'm not afraid of the risks. Now, if I were to go out and take a loan for $500,000 myself to buy the next piece of equipment, I would feel differently. And, that might be the struggle to growth, but maybe we can keep growing step by step. For example, a couple of machines that we're using now, I actually invented and designed and had a local machinist crank it out for me. Instead of, I could buy the next machine for $200,000. Instead, I spent $15,000 and got myself one more step along the way. That's kind of one of my strengths, I would say, is to try to negotiate and navigate the next step that we can afford as a company. The venture capitalist, I just kind of feel like that's probably going to have to happen at some point. But in the meanwhile, I'll just keep solving problem solving from day to day and keep trying to increase the accounts from day to day and see what happens. So I'm really hoping that, you know, within the next 2 years, we can be in a larger facility. We can have 20 people working for us instead of just two, and that we have the accounts to support that, and it works well at that level. But how to get there, I'm still a little clueless.
well, that's interesting how you put it. I once talked to a consultant who said a true entrepreneur is the person who will risk their house and hearth for the business. Would you go that far at some point?
Their house and the what?
And hearth.
I mean
a fireplace.
Hearth at home.
Hearth. Okay, gotcha. It seemed like it was the right move. We are willing to risk in it. And we did. I mean, we did give the company a $20,000 loan out of our own pocket last year just to buy an order of tins, the custom-made tins. You know, that was the smallest size we could get. That is a risk there. Now, it's when I said we don't have any loans out there, I mean out to banks or anything like that. You know, out of our own pockets, we're contributing and investing, but we don't have anyone breathing down our necks. Everything is calculated risk too. So if the numbers are good enough and hopeful enough, and there's a sense that it's a good move, I'm willing to risk.
Well, we should emphasize to our audience, while Dan has not had a chance to taste them, product, I have. And what's more, my wife, who has much more taste than I do, thinks they're out of this world. And that's one of the reasons why you're on this program, to give it a boost. Jonathan, what is your website again, so people themselves can try them?
Sure. It's just Stroopies.com.
Can you spell it out?
Yes. Stroopies is STROOPIES.com. Very easy to find us.
Dan, I turn it back to you.
Thank you. Jonathan, as you were talking with Don, I had some thoughts that I wanted to ask you about. you currently have one full-time person, and indicated as you approach the holiday season, you will add maybe three or four more because of demand. And your strategy, in your long-term strategy, is to take your product to a national brand, a national presence. Yet, it's fair to say that you have some concerns about the likelihood of that happening and what the costs might be. Maybe an alternative intermediate strategy would be to look at your regional market and to see what you can do to expand your footprint in your regional market with regional distribution. I know that you talked about individual stores that you're in, specialty stores, but Is there a local, not national, that may have a few stores that you could be offering your in there? And looking at gas stations and other sources, so that if you look at where your sales are coming from in the Lancaster area, maybe you can expand your business by looking at distribution beyond the city of Lancaster and look at other cities branching out, which could have the potential to add to your volume, but at a much lower risk and an opportunity to build capital and reserves. Have you thought about expanding your regional strategy?
Yes. In fact, we just signed on, as a result of the Fancy Food Show, we signed on, there's no contract, but there is a small distributor. I say small, he's not dealing with the big national brands. He's dealing with small local chains. And we're just sending out our first order to him. I have another meeting with another distributor tomorrow. Basically, they're more regional distributors in a local market. And so that's kind of the logical next step in that. At the same time, the other strategy is for us to try to find, I mentioned about the hotel example. Maybe it's not a nationwide hotel, but if it would just be a couple of local places. And the reason why I say that is we are such a fourth quarter business, and that's it's a good thing, but it's a real frustration because we lose a lot of things by having to only hire temporary. We have to retrain people the next year, and right. We would love to be able to offer year-round work for our refugee ladies who – shoot, they've gone through so much transition, I feel bad to give them more transition by only giving them temporary work. So if we can find markets outside the Christmas gift season, but it's maybe, the amusement park industry, it has a really busy summer to help us with that, or we're looking at, we have developed some partnering with some wedding coordinators who can help us out in this, spring and early summer. Trying to build those other times of the year so that we have a more consistent production, and that will help us out overall too. So that's one of our other strategies we're working on.
Are you working or talking with Hershey Foods or the Hershey Park in their amusement park?
Not sure. No, we're not. I'm not sure what door to knock on there, who to talk to. As I'm finding, we're always looking for those warm leads and connections because it's all in who you know. So if we could find a good lead there, boy, that would be thrilling.
Okay.
Dan, we're gonna have to cut it short. We're getting towards the end of the hour. We've been talking with Jonathan Groff. It's been a with his product. I always get Stroopies. Right.
Groupie.
Again, right. Jonathan, your website for one last time?
Yeah, just stroopies.com, stroopies.com. And orders of $30 or more is free shipping.
Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dan Perkins here with your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. So you're thinking about starting a new business. How much money will you need? Sometimes starting a small business can be overwhelming. Can you afford to start your business? Do you even know how much money it will take? So here's your recalculating small business tip of the day. Before you start your business, you need to figure out what it will cost you to run your household. How much money will you need to pay your current expenses? If you don't have a formal budget, then start one. Look in your checkbook for the last 2 years and see how much you spent, but just as important, where did you spend it? Next, see what can go. Can you reduce your out-of-pocket expense? I suggest to startups that they have at least 9 months worth of living expenses in the bank or brokerage account. Knowing you've got the money to live is one less thing to worry about. This has been your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. I'm Dan Perkins.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating.
We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.